This is Festival Showcase, a weekly interview program that explores the artists and music behind the 2015 season of the Aspen Music Festival and School and previews upcoming performances. This program comes to you from Aspen Public Radio, the official voice of the Aspen Music Festival and School, and can be heard online at aspenpublicradio.org. We have a lot of ground to cover today. Opera Director Ed Berkeley will be covering all of the operatic events of the Aspen Music Festival season. Then we will talk with 16-year-old Malaysian composer and pianist Tengku Irfan, who performs with the Aspen Chamber Symphony this Friday. Here's Ed Berkeley.
This one, the Romeo and Juliet, I mean, one of the choices that I made was that the piece is extremely romantic, mm-hmm. and I like the romanticism of it very much. And I wanted to bring that out in the production. So it's staying, the costuming for it, the look of the show in terms of clothing especially, is going to stay mostly with its foot in the 19th century, mm-hmm. so that it feels sort of year of composition kind of feeling to it in terms of Gounod and being part of a very romantic tradition. There's a little bit of a nod to a more contemporary vanity, which I think is part of what the opera is addressing. And so there's something of a more, there are occasionally some more contemporary looks. But it's a spare production visually, but I think quite romantic.
You say spare, but I did see part of the set, and it's very sparkly, actually.
Yes, actually, it is very sparkly. So there's not a lot up there, but it will shine. In working with the designer, John Casarda, I asked for almost a ballet set, almost a space in which you could imagine dancers all the time. Mm-hmm. Because even though in this version we're not including the huge ballets which were traditional to the period, much of it feels like dance in terms of how expressive the music is and how expressive the orchestration is.
And how I imagine the singers are going to have to move about as if they're dancers.
As if dancers, and with a very strong sense of space. Yeah.
Is French one of the easier languages for your students to master? I would think French and Italian would be certainly easier than Czech or Russian.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, French and Italian. Well, Italian first, I guess. Hopefully, one would think English might be, but really it's Italian that's the most direct. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then French comes in. And something that's been wonderful with rehearsing this is how well the chorus, the entire chorus, has taken to the French in the chorus, because Gounod's choruses are fantastic, and these are very, very wonderful choruses, and the cast is doing great with it.
So there you have the 16th, the 18th, and the 20th for Romeo and Juliet. And then not long after that, I know you're not directly involved with it, but Vittorio Grigolo is coming into town.
Yeah.
And I imagine your students must be really thrilled to have a chance to sit and watch him sing.
It could be a just fantastic night. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a kind of experience that we don't have, not a lot of any Americans have had that much of hearing him directly in recital.
But it is amazing. He's had quite a meteoric career.
Meteoric is right. And I think it'll be exciting to hear him in the space.
Right. And that kind of a voice, that sort of that ping that he has.
The ping should fill beautifully.
Well, you have an unusual American double bill. I guess it's two one-acts, one of them Christopher Theophanidis, and then one of them Stephen Stuckey, who's a resident composer here. Now, I want to ask first about The Cows of Apollo.
Inspired by a satyr play by Sophocles that is a comic approach to a serious issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, the idea of these plays, they were like sketches to be performed after a serious tragedy, mm-hmm. that addressed a similar theme. I mean, the theme of the story is the discovery of music.
Right.
But it's told, the story is told by William Hoffman, the librettist. Bill's approach to it is finding the Keystone Cops approach to a very serious subject.
I see.
So it becomes, in places, extremely broad comedy. I mean, excuse me, the cast will moo. It has got a mixture of silliness. And then suddenly it takes a quite serious turn when Maya, who is the mother of Hermes and Apollo, appears and is mourning the absence of something, which turns out to be music. And then music is found. It's found in a somewhat unique way in this version.
The first thing that comes to mind is what kind of music do you write prior to the invention of music?
Right. So it starts with these great, I would say, Grecian-inspired chants. Mm-hmm. So it's like the gathering of the tribe of satyrs and maenads who are gathering on a hilltop to retell the story of the invention of music. Mm-hmm. And the story of it involves the stealing of the cows of Apollo, and they're lost, and then how it develops and refinding a cow of Apollo who turns out to have been, who was killed by Hermes, who took the skull of the cow and turned it into the first lyre, L-Y-R-E, not L-I-A-R.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And turned it into the first lyre so that then there could be music.
I see.
And then Apollo takes the music, and the piece is quite short, actually. And by the end of it, which is about 38 minutes long, at the end of it, it turns into this extraordinary hymn to the power of music, which people have compared like To Make Our Garden Grow, or one of the big, big choral moments in an opera. Mm-hmm. And so it goes from a relatively simple, but actually sophisticated, but simple Greek chant to becoming this, you know, an enormous anthem.
Well, tell us about Stephen Stuckey's work, too, the classical style. He is here now as, I guess, the director of the Contemporary Composition Program. Mm-hmm. And his opera, his one act, is being offered as part of this package.
Right. Classical style received a concert version, was done in concert form last year, very, very successfully. And this is the first staging of it, and the first full staging of it. And what Steve has done with Jeremy Dank as librettist is to take a very serious examination of the classical style in music and to offer a very witty comic take and commentary that's guaranteed to appeal, I think, to all levels. You don't have to be a music nerd to get the jokes. Mm-hmm. The sense of humor is there. The three principal characters, well, the principal character we meet is Charles Rosen, who is a real person and a pianist and scholar who wrote a book called The Classical Style. And Charles Rosen character is present in and out of the opera, sort of expounding on various things about the nature of music. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we're following, which is part of his book, an idea of this gathering imagined from Jeremy Dank, imagined meeting of Mozart, Beethoven, and Haydn in heaven, who have learned that music is dead. And so now they're wondering, well, what does this mean to us? What does it mean that classical style is dead? Mm-hmm. And so, of course, they're going to come back to Earth and try and find the solution to this problem in their life. And so as they come back to Earth, they meet characters like Tonic, who now appears as a person, dominant, subdominant. Mm-hmm. They go through things where there's a lecture section where Charles Rosen is supposed to appear, but somehow he misses, on sonata form itself, which is an extraordinary scene because Steve has composed a sonata to tell what it means to create a sonata.
Right.
So that you're listening to this is really fantastic piece of music. Mm-hmm. But then it explores a number of comical and serious, well, mostly comical, visions of the nature of music. Mm-hmm. And what's great and what I love about the piece actually is that in the last section of it, it takes a fairly serious turn towards looking at what does it actually mean to say classical music is dying And what does it actually mean to us that classical music, classical style itself has died and mm-hmm. that we've moved on? And what does this mean? And it's really wants to be, and I think can be, a profound look at the nature of music again. And so the two pieces together are both looking at, in one case, in the Cows of Apollo, the invention of music, and from the other side, the future of music.
Right, or the death of a musical style or
right,
something.
Right, and change in musical style.
So, Ed, one of the things that happened in the last year or two has been having a major production at the Tent, Peter Grimes being a great example. All of a sudden, it was a success, and now it's becoming a tradition. And you have the challenge, of course, of directing something at the Tent that is neither fully staged nor unstaged. Tell us a little bit about Aida.
Aida in the Tent, semi-staged.
Right.
Once again, as with Peter Grimes, actually, the chorus as a force, which was very present in Peter Grimes, and again is an important role in Aida, is primarily in the loft up above behind the stage, mm-hmm. so that we're seeing the principal side, the principles of the story, Aida and Fellows, are below, you know, acting out the story. The tricky thing for me is that with something in Aida, I mean, people who know Aida love the spectacle. Well,
right.
So I've had to come up with ways of implying and suggesting the spectacle. It's one big scene, mm-hmm. implying and suggesting the spectacle in a way that I think we can do in the Tent that will bring a sort of pleasure and delight in the way that I think this sort of celebration, the return of the army in Aida, is supposed to be the triumphal march, the way that moment is supposed to be felt in the opera. So that's the big challenge for me in doing this in the Tent.
You have some big voices, Michelle DeYoung and others, for this performance, and maybe you can tell us a little bit about that, because they're going to be standing up there on the stage with the orchestra, and even with a little bit of enhancement from the microphones, that's still going to be requiring a whole different vocal approach, I would think, than having an orchestra safely down in the pit.
Yeah, I mean, and we don't enforce or reinforce the voices in these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really a challenge. It means, I mean, in a number of semi-stage things I've done, you have to make sure that the singer's ability to sing at all times is right there, and that mm-hmm. they're in a physical place and a space where they really can fill the house.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a director, a lot for me is making sure the music is well attended to primarily.
Sure.
And
sure.
It's really, and it's tricky. In this case, it's a pleasure for me because Tammy Wilson, who's singing Aida and who debuted it this year at the Met, clearly knows the role extremely well. And Tammy also is an alum of AOTC. So it's great to have her coming back to do a principal role like this in the Tent,
mm-hmm.
and which is fun for me. I think it'll be fun for people who can remember when she performed with us.
Sure, yeah. Our last operatic week, or last big event, of course, is Così fan tutte. I believe it's the 18th, the 20th, and the 22nd of August.
Right.
And that, again, takes us back to the Wheeler, a more traditional kind of thing, with a sometimes untraditional director this time.
Yeah.
So tell us
Jim's approach, which is Jim's approach, that's for sure, and which I think is great. And he's going to be moving, the period of the opera is being moved into a somewhat more contemporary world.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's not quite Mad Men, but it's coming close. And uh-huh. so that we're going into a more contemporary vision. And I think it's very, I think it should be a wonderful, wonderful production. I think it will be very clever, and obviously it's a very great Mozart work.
The music of Mozart, of course, is so stellar it almost hurts. And the Beethoven, I think, was one of the first to really object to it on the grounds of morals. And then I've also heard feminist objections to it.
Oh, yes.
All kinds of things.
Well, of course, in the opera classical style, Mozart and Beethoven get to argue.
Oh.
Which is great fun. Yeah,
I can imagine. And I don't know if you can tip your hat a little, show us your cards a little bit about what James Robinson is thinking of doing with this opera and how he's approaching it.
Not really in detail. I mean, part of it is that as someone running a program, you hire someone because they're good, mm-hmm. and then you give them the chance to execute who they are.
Sure.
You know? And that's, I think, an important thing to do.
And especially with someone like James. I mean, he's yeah. got so much experience under his belt.
So. And so this will be smart.
In other words, you're entrusting him.
I've got to.
You got your hands full.
I have enough to do this summer.
Yeah. Right, right. Ed, we see you all around. If you're not sure who Ed Berkley is, he's the guy that always walks around in shorts and white socks. So you can recognize him pretty easily. And Ed, thank you so much for taking the time to come in and talk
Absolutely.
To us here.
Thanks, Chris.
If you've just joined us, this is Festival Showcase on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Chris Moore, and I've been interviewing Ed Berkley, who offers opera masterclasses every Saturday at 10, organizes several opera house music recitals through the season, directs Gounod's Romeo and Juliet July 16th, 18th, and 20th, directing Christopher Theophanidis's The Cows of Apollo and Stephen Stuckey's The Classical Style August 1st, directs Verdi's Aida at the Tent August 7th, and has brought director James Robinson in for Così fan tutte August 18th, 20th, and 22nd. Now, let's hear about 16-year-old Malaysian composer and pianist Tengku Irfan, who performs with the Aspen Chamber Symphony this Friday in the music of Oliver Messiaen.
Writing for an orchestra is always something that I'm really excited. Sometimes mm-hmm. I get too excited. But also the fact that I really love listening to orchestral music and then also learning from composers, I mean, from the past and from the present about how they orchestrate. I mean, not just the structural harmony, but also the orchestration aspect mm-hmm, of mm-hmm. the piece. So I'm somehow very interested in it. So then, which makes me want to write for orchestra.
When I see you in concerts, and I can just tell everybody here that I go to a lot of concerts, and I see you at many of them. So, like, unlike many students, you seem to make it a really high priority to go to as many concerts as possible. You always seem very calm and very quiet and a very balanced kind of person, but now you're telling me that you get extremely excited when you're composing and when you're orchestrating. Tell me a little bit about those two sides of your personality, if you will.
I mean, the concerts are something that I have to say that in Aspen, I mean, you probably can't get it in anywhere else. I mean, as a student here, students have the privilege of attending as many concerts as possible. And anyways, they are free. So mm-hmm. I really take the advantage because, I mean, there's not a better time to watch the best performers.
The music that we're about to hear. Can you tell us the name of this piece? And then I wanted to ask you a little question about it. It's an orchestral piece.
Yeah, it's an orchestral piece. It's called Sahibul Hikayat, Fantasy Overture, which is Sahibul Hikayat means once upon a time in Malay. Mm-hmm. So there are Malay influences and then some Arabic influences. But at the time I was writing this piece, I was writing in a way that where the intervals are dominant in the piece. So in this case, you will hear a lot of thirds dominating throughout the piece. But then I also tried to create something fresh with it and with some instruments that would support the exotic nature of the piece, such as temple blocks, tambourine.
Mm-hmm. It reminded me just a little bit. It doesn't sound, I wouldn't mistake you for Christopher Rouse, but it reminded me a little bit of that and some of the other very, you know, muscular, intense, powerful compositions where the strength of the orchestra comes through and the ability to express whatever it may be. I'm not sure if it's anger or But something intense. Can you say a little bit about what feelings are being expressed in this piece?
I mean, throughout this piece, I can't really remember what I was thinking back then when I wrote this piece. But I thought I had different emotional whirlwinds happening at that time. There's probably anger, but I can't attribute to something concrete. I mean, because the music that I write is still abstract. Mm-hmm. But Chris Ross was certainly a composer who I was listening a lot while writing this piece. Uh-huh. I was listening to his Second Symphony and the Gorgon, which right. I would say it
that's
really
a rager.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's take a listen.
This is called Sahibul Hikayat, Fantasy Overture.
Thank you for bringing that into the studio. And that was a rather short piece. Was that the entire Fantasy Overture we heard?
That's just an excerpt towards the end of the piece. The whole piece is about 17 minutes long.
As an audience member, talking to other audience members and as a radio announcer who is a lightning rod for opinions among these audience members, there's a percentage of people that just either flat out do not like contemporary music or at the very least they're having a hard time with it. You last year played Pierre Boulez. It was an amazing performance, I might add. There are other pieces you play by the students here, of course, the composition students, and other contemporary works that I'm sure we'll be hearing when you're playing them, perhaps in the chapel chamber concerts and things like that. What do you have to say to audiences, not the ones that have completely reject contemporary music, but at least the ones that are having a hard time and saying, I just don't get what's going on. What's happening here? Help me.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about contemporary music is that what I think is probably the really amazing thing about it is the diversity mm-hmm. you get from different ranges of composer, and then it's something that you really won't know how it will start or what will happen in a piece. Sometimes you can get somebody that's tied to minimalism, and then you might get a serial piece, or you might get neither, or maybe something that's based on pitch sets, or probably even things that we don't know could possibly exist. So my thing about listening about contemporary music is that not to try to force yourself to hear every single thing, but I mean, it's incredible if you could hear every single thing, but it's to get the general atmosphere of it, because some of the things, I mean, that you hear might have a lot of notes, which they are contemporary music, which have a lot of textural effects. And the thing about it is that composers use this to reflect what they think is more truthful, because sometimes what's truthful is not as simple as it seems. So it's more about the textural effect. It's rather than what you would hear in some in romantic music, classical music, where the melody is the important mm-hmm. aspect of it. But in contemporary music, there's a lot of other aspects, and texture is also one very important aspect. And the thing about it is to just go with it, and then you don't have to like it, but you have to be open with what you hear.
So for one thing, it sounds like what you're saying is, in a way, as an audience member, less is better, because if you go in saying, I want a melody, I'm not getting a melody, I reject this, instead of saying, what's here? What is this? And then, oh, I'm hearing textures. Maybe this is somehow something is being expressed through the texture, or maybe something's being expressed through the rhythm or other aspects besides just the melody and harmony, which is what we think of.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for taking the time to join us here at Aspen Public Radio, and looking forward to hearing you over the course of the summer.
Thank you.
Young Malaysian composer and pianist Tengku Irfan, who performs with the Aspen Chamber Symphony this Friday. This has been Festival Showcase, a weekly interview program that explores the artists and music behind the 2015 season of the Aspen Music Festival and School and previews upcoming performances. Please join me Tuesdays at 3:30 and replays on Saturdays at 3 o'clock for more interviews. My name is Chris Moore. Thanks for listening.